Welcome to the Boost Podcast with Kelly Leonard. The podcast providing you with immediate access to tools, tips, and tactics to boost your business and career success. Build your brand, optimize relationships, obtain more leads, secure thought leadership space, and tap into new markets. It's the Boost Podcast. And now, here's Kelly Leonard.
Hello and welcome back to the Boost Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Leonard. Venshel Sandeep is a freelance writer, author, and editor who enjoys helping aspiring authors, editors, and businesses find confidence in their writing abilities to publish on different platforms. She's currently pursuing her doctorate in public health leadership. And in this episode, we chat about building your brand, optimizing relationships, and tapping into new markets. So now here's Venshel. Hey, Venshel, welcome to the Boost Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
So again, I mean, I would have to go back and really try to distill like 32 years of experience into 5 minutes, which is really tough for me. But I am based in Maryland. My background is in public health. I'm currently pursuing a doctoral degree in public health leadership. And that came about because I think, as I was mentioning earlier, I lived in Haiti for quite some time. And it definitely shaped, you know, my world. And then also just my passion in working in the public health field. And on the side, I'm also the founder of Pathway Coach Writing, where I amplify the voices of people who are maybe underrepresented in the publishing industry. And again, my life has really been, if I think about it that way, trying to combine my love for public health with my passion for writing. And this is an ongoing process. I don't think that I have arrived, because if nothing else, I think as those two fields evolve, like my thoughts on how to make use of them and how to use them for impact, you know, is definitely changing and evolving as well.
Wow. Thank you for that. And yeah, I can imagine with 3 decades of experience, it's like, oh, where do I begin?
Yes.
So Venshel, tell me more about sort of what inspired you to become a writer and an editor.
I think that I joined this movement unbeknownst to myself when I was in college, because I would have, like, you know, several of my classmates ask me to, you know, give them content feedback on their essays. And that's where my love for the industry began. But at the time, I was just doing this for fun. You know, I didn't really think about, you know, creating a business out of it. Actually, I didn't even know if that was even a thing. Because again, at the time when I was in college, I remember that if you needed your work to be edited, people just went to the writing center. So I didn't even know at the time that there were, you know, there were people out there who did this for a living. And then I would say right before the pandemic, one of my friends said to me, hey, you should definitely look into, you know, building a business around it. You know, and again, I thought long and hard about it. And then I decided, okay, well, I don't really have much to lose. Let me create a website. And then that's how I was able to start, you know, just getting clients that were outside of that referral, like, you know, I guess referral period. But to be honest with you, I just stumbled on writing. And I think it probably started like when I was young, where, you know, again, my family instilled in me this love for reading. Mm-hmm. And I realized very quickly how, you know, if done right, that the power of words and how much of a positive impact it had on my life. I think one of the first authors that I read was I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. By Maya Angelou. Mm-hmm. And I think after reading that book, and there was like another book too, like, you know, I think written by Peace Corps, like former Peace Corps volunteers. And I said, you know what? I think, you know, again, I don't know where it's going to lead me, but I think this is something I might want to explore later on in life. So,
wow. Well, I appreciate it because we all have a story to tell, something that's bubbling up inside of us, whether it's, you know, sort of fiction or nonfiction, there's a story to tell. And so when you reflect on this journey that you've had in this space? What are some of the more challenging writing projects that you've worked on?
I would say that all of them, you know, to be fair to my clients, I think like all of the projects that I have engaged in were challenging because, again, most of the projects that I have received thus far are people who are trying to write textbooks, people trying to write memoirs, dissertations. And again, this is happening right before or a few years before I even decided to go and get a doctorate degree. Mm-hmm. And to your question even earlier, I think if nothing else, the challenge is not necessarily to edit and to provide feedback to clients on their written work, but it's also about representation. Mm-hmm. Which was one of the reasons why I even decided to do this. There was an underrepresentation of people of color in the writing and the editing industry. I mean, at a certain point, the numbers were pretty high, but it slowly but surely dwindled over time. And I think it, you know, from someone who is of Caribbean descent, and again, I know I'm probably going to get some slack for this. I think that the best way to learn about someone's country is mm-hmm. to, or another person's country, is to read books written by the authors who are natives mm-hmm. of that country. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. the narrative, you know, kind of shift when it's someone else and it's coming from an outsider.
Yeah. And that, what you just said, and I don't know why, well, I guess in this day and age, people can give you flack over all sorts of things, but I do agree with you wholeheartedly. And because of you and I, the connection that we share. And so part of what our listeners aren't aware of is the conversation that happened before this conversation and sort of this connectedness that you are Haitian American. I'm married to a Haitian American. And so we started having conversations around that point of connection. And certainly when I reflect on Haiti, for example, and right. the narrative out of Haiti and sort of the American impression, if you will, of Haiti. But I digress.
No, we're not digressing. This is very much in line with what we're talking about. Like when you say challenges, it's also the challenge also could be for someone like me trying to write mm-hmm. about my memories of a country that somehow like it's the history has faded over time. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people who, you know, who lived under, you know, the former dictatorship mm-hmm. who may have a complete different outlook right. on, you know, the trajectory of Haiti. Mm-hmm. You know, versus someone like me who didn't grow up, right. you know, in that era. And so the challenge sometimes is really trying to understand the context.
Yes.
The context and lived experience. Of the story.
The lived experience that each of us yeah. have. So, yeah, exactly. I definitely absolutely agree with that. Thank you for that.
Yes.
And so as you think about even with your business.
Yes.
And sort of the evolution of your business. What lessons have you learned around sort of the branding for your business? Because, of course, you have a pretty niche type of audience that you are connecting with. So share some of the lessons that you've learned around branding.
I think one of the main lessons about branding that I have learned is not to trust my own ideas about branding. To always look at branding from the eyes of the customer. Because I sort of went in an unconventional way when I built this business. Like, you know, typically people will, you know, write their business plan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then once the business plan is complete, then they go and start their business. They create their logos and their branding. But I just went in a different route altogether. I actually started attracting clients first. And then I wrote the business plan. You know, mm-hmm. based on the challenges that I was going through, based mm-hmm. on their needs, based on their own observations, so that it was truly a client-centered business.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that was like one of the major lessons of all branding. And then also another thing about branding that I've learned myself, everything I'm sharing with you is, you know, like I've said before, everything is evolving. And so even when we're talking about the niche, my niche, I'm also starting to think about, well, how can I expand my outreach, right? So that it doesn't become a niche, a niche field, per se. But another lesson I've learned about branding is not just to rely on Instagram and LinkedIn, but actually bring yourself to conferences, you know, bring yourself to, like I'm doing right now, on a podcast and talk about your business, which is something that I think before, when I started before the pandemic, it wasn't something that I was advocating a whole lot because there was not a lot of buzz around that. And maybe it's because I didn't know how to get on, you know, on the radar of podcast as well, podcast host as well. So that's another lesson, and not just to rely on Instagram and Facebook ads and what have you, but to go to conferences. And then also, in order to hopefully do well in the in this industry, is to understand your core values. And this goes both ways for the editor and for the clients that you're working with. Because based on your core values, it can shape and dictate, you know, where you go and brand your book. You know, maybe, and that also goes with publishers too. I don't advocate for people to just, you know, stick with the, you know, Simon and Schuster, Penguin Books and all that. And that's great because when you end up with those publishers, you get a lot of exposure. And yet, you know, we talk when we talk about representation, you also want to go for publishers that are underrepresented as well. And so I really believe in casting a wide net, this casting this wide net approach.
So when branding. Okay. And so then let's talk about this wide approach. And in terms of market expansion, how important is things like cultural sensitivity and localization in the process of market expansion? And what are some of the common pitfalls that folks should avoid?
I think the common pitfalls that people should avoid in terms of localization and cultural sensitivity is to always try to get a second pair of eyes. Again, we were talking about this earlier, like when you're writing a book about a country that you necessarily don't come from, you want to get the perspective of someone who was born and was raised there for a long period of time. Because again, when we're talking about the written work, language change as well. And we need to take into account these nuances when we're writing content. And so that's why I said it's so critically important to go beyond just thinking about the branding. We have to really hone in on the process. In terms of the cultural sensitivity, it's a hit or miss because even now with the advent of AI, once again, nothing is foolproof. And so it's always trying to make sure that you have someone who, you know, who was born in that country to give you a second pair of eyes. And then also looking at what other people have done as well. Whether it's through, you know, again, now they have these Facebook groups, they have these like LinkedIn groups where people gather there, and who are experiencing these similar issues. And I think that it's important for people to get into those groups so that they can understand what's really happening in the market, in terms of when you're trying to sell, like, you know, content specific to a certain genre and all of that. So
let's say you have your brand, you figure out your market, your target audience, perhaps. What are some tips that you can share around crafting a compelling story? Because, of course, you know, again, we all have a story to share. We all have a story to tell. But I think the unique differentiator is this notion of sharing a compelling story that moves people in some way, shape, or form. So what are some tips that you have for that?
I think like the first question that comes to mind as soon as you said that, because again, going based on the idea that nothing is foolproof, is how are people defining the story that you said that would be compelling to an audience? Like, how are they defining that? Because I think that based on the way that they define what is compelling content, it's going to change the type of audience that they attract. And I think, and that's where looking into people's previous work, like the ones that actually made it to a New Yorker, essentially doing like a gap analysis, trying to see, okay, like I figured out my target audience and I want to write about XYZ, but based on previous work, what worked and what didn't work. So I think there needs to be some level of analysis to be done.
Mm-hmm. So like doing some market research to figure out where the gaps are and what is unique to your story that you can tell perhaps a different story or
it's sort of like research. Mm-hmm. You know, like, again, you have these people who talk about a different topic, they looking at it from different angles, and you're trying to figure out, well, what is unique about my story that's going to add value to this conversation? And sometimes I have worked with clients where they had an idea, and then when they go and do some research on this idea, they realize that the market is saturated with, you know, for example, stories on grieving. Mm-hmm. Okay, but even if you want to write about grieving, it's like, how are you going to write it in a way where it resonates? Like, mm-hmm. And how do you know what's going to resonate or what's not going to resonate? That's why I talk about being in those different types of groups to understand what's really happening from the lens of the people who are actually going through the process. Mm-hmm. Instead of just focusing on what's on the internet, in my humble opinion.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said something interesting in terms of, you know, we talked about, you know, nothing being foolproof and all this. And then also, it sounds, well, no, we know that so much of, you know, what is appealing and compelling for one person may not be appealing and compelling for another person. But how, in your opinion, do you measure success of a writing project?
That's a great question. How do I define, how do I define success? Mm-hmm. I don't know, for me, as an editor, I define success not by the amount of books that are sold, because I've had situations like this where people sell a lot of books and then they don't have many reviews.
Okay.
And so again, going back to the analysis piece on figuring out, okay, what worked and what didn't work. I think for me, because my business is client centric, I define success by them being content with the overall product that they have written. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, they know that once they put it out there, they're going to be some people who resonate with the story, and they're going to mm-hmm. be some people who don't resonate with the story. And I think it's important for them to be content with what they've written, because ultimately, as an editor, I'm just a cheerleader. I am the coach. You know, I'm focusing on their strength, because I use positive psychology to really draw on the strength and try to turn whatever I would see as a weakness into a strength. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, success in the sense of what are some of the lessons that they have learned as they were going through the process of writing. So if someone is content with the overall product and they've learned something in the process of writing, then I define that as success. Because mm-hmm. again, like I've said, I've seen people, I had two or three clients, you know, they were able to sell many copies of their books, and yet there were not many reviews. Mm. And so that's where the market research goes into play. It's like, okay, you had the right message, but was it the right time for you to publish this book? Mm. Because there's like, there needs to be also like a window of opportunity. Like right now, when you go on LinkedIn, there are many conversations going around on executive leadership and women of color. Mm-hmm. So if someone wanted to write about that, this is the perfect timing.
Right.
So it's a question of timing. You can have the right content, but you publish it at the wrong time. Or sometimes you can have the right content, but for the wrong audience. So it's I know as you're asking me the questions, I'm thinking, okay, these are great questions. And yet I cannot give you a yes or no, because I know from experience that there are nuances, there are confounding factors. There are many things there are many variables that I may not be able to take into account right now because it's constantly changing.
Yeah. And the marketplace moves so quickly. You know, we talk about something and it seems like, when are we going to move on to some other? So, and in a split second, something happens, you know, whether it's globally or nationally or locally, and then the attention of the reader pivots to a different area, topic area. And so what I'm hearing and what you said is almost this notion of stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
Exactly. No, for sure. No, you have to. Preparation meets opportunity. No, yeah. that's for sure. I mean, there are even, like, now that I even think about it, there are certain topics that I wanted to publish like maybe 3 years ago, and it just wasn't the right time. And I had to wait. And I think that's the issue that we deal with nowadays. It's almost like people want everything to behave like Amazon Prime. And it doesn't work this way. Sometimes you have to wait. And find that window of opportunity to insert yourself. And I think that's something that some people may deal with. It's impatience with the process. And writing requires you to trust the process.
As an editor, do you tell your client, like if a client were to come to you with an idea and say, hey, this is what I want to write about, is it part of your sort of fiduciary responsibility, if you will, to say, good topic, wrong time? Or no, it's, hey, I'm here to simply support you in whatever success looks like. Like, do you find yourself advising clients to say, yeah, I'm not sure that this is the right time for this?
It depends. I've had to do that because I'm the type of editor, I'm not going to take anyone's hard-earned money if our vision is not aligned. And I think also it's a question of expectations. I think it has been of utmost importance to sit down with my clients, I think in the first meeting, to just try to define and distill what exactly they're trying to do and whether or not I'm the right person, you know, to help them get there. And so I've had discussions where I've had to say, you know, I had a client who said, you know, they wanted to write a book in 10 days. And I'm thinking, how interesting. You know, how interesting.
I didn't say it like that. How interesting.
I didn't say it like that. I was a little bit more, let's just say my response a little bit more refined. It's just that I think sometimes people are just engrossed with social media's perception of what they should be doing, when they should be doing it. And I think sometimes you just gotta stop thinking or stop focusing on social media's timeline and focus on your own timeline. And the clients who have had the most success with me are the ones who literally just, it probably took them 2 years, you know, to get their books out. But when someone is telling me they want a New York Times bestseller, I don't promise that. I don't promise the New York Times bestseller because, again, based on my definition of success. So it depends. It depends. I see. But I hear the So I want to know what you mean by
No, there's no there's nothing behind the
Okay.
But I will ask you, my last question is,
yes,
if you're listening and they have a book that has been marinating in their spirit, that is just dying to get out, and they want to reconnect, they want to connect with you and learn more about the work that you do, what is the best way for our listeners to connect with you?
Absolutely. They can find me on LinkedIn. That's where I reside. They can find me on all social media platforms. by typing my name, Vinchelle Sendik, or Pathway Coach Writing. And then again, like also they can check out my website, because my website has a list of publications, but most importantly, like the podcasts I've been on and the summits, the virtual writing summits that I've attended as a panelist. And so, yes, excellent. Absolutely.
Well, Vinchelle, this was extraordinary. Thank you so much for what you're doing to lift the voices of underrepresented authors and speakers and other folks. And so definitely celebrate what you do. And thank you for sharing your wisdom with our listeners.
Thank you so much.
Well, that concludes this episode of the Boost Podcast. Thank you again for listening in. If you don't mind, if you could like, subscribe, or share the podcast with a friend, I would greatly appreciate it. For more information on anything Boost related, you can visit our website at www.kellytleonard.com.